Now to that exercise story. Last week, researchers from the University of New South Wales published a study which suggested that for fat loss, 20 minutes, three times a week of high-intensity sprints alternating with less intense periods was the goal. Sounds almost too good to be true. Here's Associate Professor Steve Boucher, who runs the Fat Loss Laboratory at University of New South Wales Faculty of Medicine.
For probably about 10 years now, we've been trying to find the least amount of exercise that overweight, obese individuals can do with the best clinical benefits. And one of the best forms of exercise seems to be this rather unique exercise, which we call interval sprinting. We've done a whole bunch of studies looking at fat loss, muscle mass, hormonal characteristics, lipid characteristics in women. We've shown that this kind of exercise is much better at losing abdominal fat and subcutaneous fat under the skin than twice as long with steady state exercise, that is cycling for 40 minutes or jogging for 40 minutes. Interval sprinting they do for half the time, 20 minutes. But we've never looked deep inside the body in the abdominal cavity where the real dangerous fat is, and that's visceral fat.
The fat that sits around your intestines and really makes your tummy protrude.
Stomach, liver, you know, if you grab your belly, that's still subcutaneous. You've got to go deep into the abdominal cavity to actually get the visceral. So the visceral drains through the portal vein into the liver, whereas all the other fat drains into the circulation, and that's the problem. It overloads the liver and is the best predictor for cardiovascular disease, inflammation, and diabetes.
And what is this interval sprinting? What do you actually do?
There's various forms of it, but the form that we do is specifically designed for fat loss. They do a little mini sprint. They start sprinting and it's almost over, so it's 8 seconds sprint.
And this is on a static bike?
On a static bike. 12 seconds then of very easy cycling.
When you say a sprint, what does the fascist who's doing it tell you to do? Go for it as fast as you possibly can? Or what?
Yes, not flat out, but nearly flat out. So we want to get their RPM, their revolutions per minute, their pedal rate for women over 110 and for men over 120. And not much load. So it's not hard exercise, it's fast exercise, moving the legs very quickly. We did a study in 2007 and showed when you do that, you get really high levels of catecholamines flooding the circulation in the blood.
The stress hormones.
They're stress hormones, but they're the major fat lipolytic factors.
Burns when you say fat, lipolytic, you mean breakdowns fat?
Breaking the fat down from subcutaneous and visceral and burning it up. And that exercise really produces catecholamines. Now, if you look at hard, moderate exercise, cycling for 40 minutes on a bike, catecholamines don't go up much at all. So that's why they're not very good for reducing fat.
Well, what you're doing in that is burning calories and strengthening your muscles, but you're not necessarily preferentially burning fat.
Increasing fitness, but oxidizing a lot of carbohydrate.
And what about sprint running? Has that ever been studied?
We've done it on bikes. It's much easier for heavy, overweight people. It bears their weight. We've looked at swimming. Difficult to get the heart rates up to 150, 160, so it's probably not going to get the catecholamine effect. We've looked at walking. Difficult. The good news is the rowing machine works quite well.
So that's the aim in the 8 seconds. You go from a standing start to a pulse rate of 150?
Yes. Stays up there and then gradually creep up till the end of the session, maybe, you know, 160, low 160s.
And what's the warm-up?
The warm-up is 5 minutes, just like a 30-watt thing, like steady state, just to get the legs moving and so forth. And then the music kicks in, 8-second sprint, 12-second easy, and they do 60 sprints. So 68 seconds, 60, 12 seconds. So there's actually 8 minutes of sprinting in each session and 12 minutes of really easy exercise. So in this study, we actually did 12 hours of exercise to reduce that visceral fat, 17% decrease in visceral fat.
So tell me about the study.
We've done two studies with women where we've reduced abdominal fat, reduced subcutaneous fat. We hadn't done any with men. And men, of course, have far more visceral fat. So 38 men were randomized to two conditions, a 12-week exercise intervention or 12-week control. They come into the lab and they did three 20-minute sessions a week. And as they got fitted with the program, we increased the resistance.
And what did the control group get?
Control group did nothing.
Oh, so it wasn't compared to just 40 minutes on the bike or 20 minutes on the bike?
No, we done that study with women. There's a recommendation that if you want to reduce your visceral fat through normal exercise, that's the steady state, you really need to do it about an hour a day, about 3,700 kilocal a week. That's a huge amount of exercise. And with our guys, they were doing it 1 hour a week, saving a huge amount of time. The second thing was, when you look at the steady state, aerobic cycling, rarely will you ever see any change in muscle mass. It doesn't go down, but it doesn't go up. Our study showed that with the sprinting, the muscle mass went up in the trunk and the legs by 1.2 kilos, 0.7 in the trunk, 0.5 in the legs, which is amazing in 3 months. Muscle is so important for health. You know, when you go on a diet, if you lost 10 kilos of weight, about 3 kilos of that will be muscle.
And what happened to their cardiovascular risk? Because some people would say, look, you're going to increase the stress hormones. If you've got cardiac risk factors, you might be getting a heart attack on the sprint bike.
Depends what you define as cardiovascular risk. But in the women's studies, the women, they had high insulin levels, they were inflamed, and all that came down significantly in those studies. And also certain lipids, HDL went up and triglycerides came down. With the guys, even though they were overweight, a BMI of 28, and weren't very fit, the actual metabolic profile wasn't too bad. So it all came down, but not significantly. But your point's a good one. This is all done with young people, 23-year-old girls, the guys are 25, and we'd be far better off looking at obese middle-aged with much more visceral fat, much more markers, and those studies haven't been done with my format, the 8 seconds, but they have been done with other forms of sprinting, and very positive results have come out of that.
And any risk, because you hear of the weekend squash player, that is the classic sprint sport, and they drop dead on the squash court because they're unused to that surge, and particularly in the stress hormones, and the heart can't cope with it.
Yeah, there's been studies on people who had recently had been stented because they had infarct and angina. They put them on these high sprint programs, obese, elderly, diabetic and metabolic syndrome. Now, they were all thoroughly screened in a medical setting.
And what was the degree of reduction in visceral fat? I mean, for example, have you measured it, say, in waist circumference?
3.5 centimetres. So they had a 17% reduction when we do the CT scans, but their waist circumference came down by 3.5.
Is there any evidence that the body gets used to this sprinting and the benefits wear off?
That's a good question. We don't know.
But you don't know how it would mix with, say, resistance training, which has been shown to prevent type 2 diabetes.
But it doesn't do a lot to visceral fat. So when you look at the weight training studies on visceral fat, they're disappointing. There's one or two ones with older people who got a lot of visceral fat, but normally they just can't do hard enough exercise to really decrease it. But it is exciting with the, you know, on the insulin resistance. So if you could do hard weights 3 or 4 times a week, it's got to be moderately hard, then there is definite benefits with that. The issue with us is that we're not doing a lot with the arm. So probably ideally, if you can do life sprints plus resistance work, that would be a great combination.
I mean, say life sprints, have you commercialized this?
Well, you can't do it without music. So there's a company down in Melbourne which
you can't do it without music.
It's very difficult. If you try and time it, so somehow an inventor,
so you follow the music cues.
The cues.
So ABBA comes on and you know you've got to sprint.
That's right, yeah. So off you go and then it's nice calming music and it's kind of a nice experience. So if people Google life sprints, they can see it's a commercial music company in Melbourne that have developed that software.
And the conflict of interest here is any?
Well, it's been done through the university and then the company has taken over the selling of it and so forth.
And this was funded by Diabetes Australia, though, not the company?
The study was, correct, yeah.
And has anybody controlled for intermittent versus continuous exercise? In other words, it could be just the intermittent nature of exercise does it rather than the sprinting, so that you go for a brisk walk, you stop and have a chat with a friend, then you go for another brisk walk. Has anybody done that controlled for the intermittent nature?
Yeah. So you do like aerobic intermittent, and it's better than doing continuous. So let's say you do 30 minutes of exercise a day, one group does it continuous, another group does 10 minutes, has a break, come back at lunch hour, 10 minutes, does it in the afternoon. That has a better effect on risk factors than doing it continuously, strangely enough. But of course, they're not sprinting, so it wouldn't be as good as pretty much any of the sprinting, the higher intensity studies, when you look at insulin sensitivity or the metabolic profile markers.
How many people have to do this for one person to benefit? Because not everybody necessarily will benefit in the same way, even though they're doing the same amount of exercise.
Yeah, that's a good question. We know with obese people, they lose their slow twitch fibers, which got far more greater concentration of mitochondria. And mitochondria is what burns fat. That's the little organelle. It's the energy factory. We've not done fiber typing on these individuals, but we clearly get individual differences. Some women and men lose a lot more fat than others.
And you're now doing a study of green tea and intensive exercise.
Yes, we've already done one study where we've combined green tea. Now, if you drink green tea, it stops those catecholamines from being degraded. So green tea significantly enhances fat oxidation at rest. We give them capsules. Now, what we did in our first study with overweight females, we combined the green tea with the sprinting. After the sprinting, it increased fat oxidation. Now, when those women come back and we gave them green tea, it was significantly more.
Is this green tea before you start?
Yes. We know that if we gave them sugar, glucose or fructose, forget fat burning.
Don't drink an energy drink.
That's correct. It's full of these high sugars and it just switches the body to oxidizing carbohydrate. You're not burning the fat. So really, the major way to do it is fasting, if you can do it early in the morning. This is proper green tea, you know, dried Camellia sinensis leaves in a capsule with known ingredients.
Steve Boucher is Associate Professor of Pharmacology at the University of New South Wales. I'm Norman Swan and this has been the Health Report. I'll see you next time.